Day after tomorrow, gentlemen, we'll be in Las Vegas.
Welcome to Vegas.
Las Vegas functions on a 24-hour-a-day schedule.
The pools, the casino.
Big volcano out in front.
That's the Eiffel Tower.
Bellagio.
Riviera.
The Mirage.
Flamingo. Sahara.
The MGM Grand.
This isn't the real Caesar's Palace, is it?
I want to gamble.
They always put the machines that pay off the most right in the front.
Good luck.
The Strip is just the most amazing stretch of road, I think, probably anywhere in the world.
Kicking ass in Vegas.
Vegas, baby.
Vegas, baby.
Welcome to Las Vegas.
The Tropicana was a unique property in the evolution of Las Vegas. While ownership was consolidated all over the city, it managed to remain independent, relatively speaking. When older properties on the Strip were imploded so new projects could replace them, Tropicana remained and instead was reimagined. Step inside, and it was clear that this was not another super casino. The property was able to capture the charm of old Vegas while evolving to keep up with modern tastes. The perpetual David to the corporate Goliath that dominated the Strip landscape, Tropicana stood as a beacon of hope that there will always be options in the market working hard to take care of guests in ways only independent competition can, even if it requires the protection of antitrust regulations to do so. Ben Jaffe bought 40 acres of land on the corner of Las Vegas Boulevard and Bond Road with plans to build the finest hotel casino in the world. Despite being part owner of the Fontainebleau in Miami Beach, at the time of the announcement, it was clarified that the Vegas Resort would not be a branch of that brand. Taylor Construction, the people who just 2 years earlier built Riviera, their first hotel casino in Vegas, would be the company tasked with building the Tropicana. Their career portfolio would go on to include Caesar's Palace, Stratosphere, as well as the distinction of building the largest hotel in the world four different times. First with the International, known today as the Westgate, then MGM, known today as the Horseshoe, then the MGM Grand, and most recently, the Venetian and Palazzo Complex. Ground broke on the 12th Strip Casino project in 1955. At a cost of $15 million, it was the most expensive resort built in Vegas to date. The Tropicana opened April 4, 1957, and was coined the Tiffany of the Strip. The hotel buildings were designed to resemble a necklace using a Y shape to maximize efficiency. Guests were given the option of four different room decors: French Provincial, Far East, Italian Renaissance, and Drexel. Each had their own veranda looking out across the $80,000 landscape and formal gardens surrounding the scalloped-edged Olympic-sized pool located in the center of the courtyard. To ensure guests of the property received prompt service, the Tropicana initially staffed more than one employee per guest. The porcachure was built off the casino floor, making it the first thing patrons saw when they walked in. Drawing people to the area was Tropicana's roadside marquee. It was a 60-foot-tall, tulip-shaped fountain, measuring 110 feet in diameter and consisting of large and small petals that flashed rose and aqua neon in opposite directions at night. But the tulip was more than just another Vegas marquee. It was a clever use of ornamentation built to hide a water cooling tower. The Tropicana appeared to be a success the moment it opened. However, not even a month after it opened, it would become the center of the first concrete evidence that the federal government had to tie organized crime to casinos in Las Vegas. On May 2, 1957, mobster Frank Costella narrowly escaped being assassinated in New York. While the attack didn't kill him, he did receive a head wound and was rushed to the hospital. While preparing Costello for doctors to work on, a handwritten note was found in his pocket. It said, "Gross casino win as of 4/26/57, $651,284. It was the exact gambling take of the Tropicana on April 26th, 1957. Once it was determined that at least portions of the note were written by Tropicana's gaming license owner on record, Louis Lederer, his license was promptly revoked and he was forced to sell his stake in the property. It's unclear if the controversy or lack of experience running a casino were the cause of the problems that followed at the property. But in 1960, claiming lucky gamblers took $20,000 to $30,000 from them at the tables, Tropicana closed for a few hours. It reopened after receiving a cash infusion of $500,000 from new casino manager J.K. Housels Jr., a Vegas veteran owner. In 1931, when Housels Jr. was only 8 years old, his father was approved for one of the first gaming licenses in Las Vegas after gambling was re-legalized by the state. That license was for a property on Fremont Street, a former smoke shop converted into a casino. Its name? The Las Vegas Club. The Housels family would own stakes in multiple Vegas properties over the years, including the El Cortez, the Desert Inn, and the Tropicana. In 1959, Housels Jr. bought Jaffe's shares in the Tropicana. Jaffe would retain ownership of the land the property was located on, though. Also during this time, a Vegas entertainment icon would set up residency at the property, the topless show, Follies Bergère. Follies would call Tropicana its home for almost 50 years before closing in 2007. With the property's reputation restored, it was ready to expand. In 1961, the Tropicana added 150 rooms and built an 18-hole golf course and country club across the street from the property, on the land now home to the MGM Grand. Citing a desire to focus on his downtown properties, in 1968, Housels Jr. sold the Tropicana to Trans-Texas Airways. To keep up with expanding competition in the market, especially from the recently opened Stardust, new owners added the Superstar Theater to the hotel casino, as well as Nevada's first indoor tennis pavilion at the property's country club. However, neither did much to help give Tropicana an edge. Next, with plans to expand the hotel, new investors were brought in. One of them was Sammy Davis Jr., making him the first African-American to own a share in a strip resort. In September of 1979, the 22-story, 600-room Tiffany Tower was opened just off the strip as part of a $20 million expansion. It was later renamed the Paradise Tower. The tower featured an atrium with a three-level shopping arcade, home to 100 restaurants and specialty shops. Aside from increasing their room inventory to 1,150, it introduced the iconic stained glass ceiling the Tropicana was famous for. The project was patterned after the stained glass ceiling that existed at the Hibernia Bank of San Francisco in the 1880s. Running the length of the main gaming area, the feature cost over $1 million to create and contains more than 4,000 square feet of leaded stained glass. Almost immediately, the project ran into issues with Tropicana's massive air conditioning and heating units located on the roof of the casino. The vibrations they emitted when running made installing glass to the ceiling virtually impossible. So instead, after 7 months of development, they created a system that would suspend the glass from the ceiling, creating a barrier between the two, allowing the vibrations to happen around the glass while not in direct contact with it. Another concern the project had to address was the noise. If the ceiling was located too low to the gaming activity below, it would amplify the noise level to unacceptable volumes. 13.5 feet above the floor was determined to be the sweet spot. A casualty of the renovations was the Tropicana Tulip Marquee. In December of 1979, 2 months after the new tower opened, Ramada Hotels bought the Tropicana for $80 million. In 1985, plans to renovate Tropicana into the Island of Las Vegas were revealed. It wasn't a proposed name change, but rather an expansion project for virtually everything at the property, including building a new hotel tower. The most notable change would be creating a 5-acre water park in the middle of the two hotel towers. In 1986, Tropicana opened the 21-story hotel tower named the Island Tower. While their plans for an actual water park never came to be, they did develop a more elaborate version of the pool area. And the strip frontage adopted a Polynesian theme, complete with two 35-foot-tall, 300,000-pound Aku Aku god statues. Tropicana began to promote themselves as Paradise Found and introduced the world's first swim-up blackjack. In 1988, when plans for what would become known as the Mirage were revealed, Tropicana attempted to sue Steve Wynn, claiming the Polynesian theme infringed on their tropical theme. The court sided in Wynn's favor. In 1989, Ramada spun all of its gaming operations into a new company named Aztar Corporation. In 1991, with the themed resort in full force in the market, exterior renovations to the resort were done, but only to enhance the existing theme. In 1992, the Wildlife Walk exhibit was added to the attractions at Tropicana. It consisted of 9 habitats on a walkway from the Paradise Tower to the back of the Island Tower. It featured a variety of parrots, cockatoos, finches, lovebirds, and mandarin ducks, to name a few. In 1994, the pedestrian bridges were installed to link Tropicana, MGM, New York, New York, and Excalibur together, making it safer for people to move from one place to another without having to cross one of the busiest intersections in the United States. Tropicana celebrated the 35th anniversary of Folies Bergère in 1995. As part of the celebration, some fun facts about the show were shared. The show used more than 1.7 million watts of electrical power. The light curtain contained 13,000 miniature bulbs and required the first computer-controlled board of its kind in Vegas to run, costing more than $250,000 to install. It featured 62 different scenery backdrops, all stored above the stage and weighing as much as 33 tons. 52 cables measuring 130 feet long were used to fly props on and off the stage during the show. And since it featured more than 110 separate costume designs, performers dressed in layers so that they could change costumes quickly between numbers by simply peeling off the last costume to reveal the next one. However, 1995 was also when the property began to lose its identity. In an attempt to attract the foot traffic the area now had an abundance of thanks to all the newly opened properties South Strip, Tropicana put on 2 nightly laser shows at the front of the property, starting at 9 p.m. The shows were known as Birth of an Island and Liquid Light Dreams and would alternate every half an hour until 11:30 p.m. In 96, the property redid the look of its entrance as well as added a baccarat room, premium slot area, and an atrium lounge. In 1999, the Tropicana created and opened the Casino Legends Hall of Fame and inducted 30 people into it who helped create and shape Las Vegas over the years. The hall was 5,000 square feet and contained over 10,000 Vegas-related items, including film clips from movies like Sinatra's Ocean's 11, Presley's Viva Las Vegas, as well as live recordings of performances by Liberace and the Rat Pack at Vegas properties. It featured news footage of the 1960 El Rancho fire that destroyed the first resort built on the Las Vegas Strip. There was a mock-up of a showgirl's dressing room and various casino chips used in the city over the years. Bob Stupak even donated the life-size bronze statue of himself that once was on display in front of the Stratosphere. But in 2002, the Casino Hall of Fame was inducting people into it that the majority of visitors either didn't know or didn't care about. So the attraction closed in 2005. Its history was documented online at CasinoLegendsHallOfFame.com for a time. But before that happened, back in 2002, looking to revitalize the property and compete with the mega resorts that surrounded it over the last decade, it was announced that Aztar would pay $117.5 million to buy the land the Tropicana existed on from the Jaffe family. The move was believed to be the first step towards a $400 million plan to demolish the property and replace it with 2 separate but linked mid-sized casinos, combining to make 120,000 square feet of casino space. Each would be located on 17 acres of land, facing the strip, and supporting a hotel with accommodations of up to 3,000. Detailed plans were expected to be released by the summer of 2003. Apparently, Tropicana's neighbors somehow forgot the fact that they had just recently been under construction because they began to voice concerns that the demolition and then construction of such a project would affect business in the area. Their attempt to prevent such a project didn't make it past a verbal ruckus. That being said, 2003 turned into 2004 with no progress. In 2005, building off the success of their newly renovated Atlantic City property, refurbishment plans began to focus during the company's earnings call, as Tropicana Las Vegas was the only casino in the Aztar portfolio that saw a year-over-year reduction in revenue. Plans for those renovations never went anywhere, because in May of 2006, Columbia Sussex purchased Tropicana for $2.75 billion. They immediately created a new subsidiary, Tropicana Entertainment LLC, and began talking about their own plans for a massive expansion that would make the property the largest hotel in the world. Initially, it was said the expansion would take the property from 1,900 rooms to 7,000 or 8,000. By the time mock-ups were revealed, it grew to 10,000 rooms. Plans called for the motel rooms surrounding the property to be demolished, leaving only the two major existing Paradise and Island towers. Then, four giant hotel towers would be added to the resort. Integrating some of the property's 50-year history into the plans, the Tulip Marquee, formerly located on the corner of Las Vegas Boulevard and Tropicana, was planned to make a return with a modern interpretation of the sculpture. Projected to cost $1 billion, the project was expected to take 5 years to complete. Cash flow from an extremely cash flow heavy Tropicana Atlantic City would be used to secure funding for the project. But in 2007, the Great Recession changed all that. After the acquisition was complete, to address declining revenues, in the first 4 months, new ownership reduced the number of employees working at all Tropicana Hotel casinos by 15%. As a result, standards at the Atlantic City Casino dramatically fell. In late 2007, the New Jersey Casino Control Commission began hearings for the Tropicana's license renewal. In December of 2007, citing complaints about maintenance and sanitation lapses in the wake of the company laying off some 1,300 employees, that license was denied. Columbia Sussex was deemed unsuitable owners and were forced to sell the property. The courts appointed a trustee until a new buyer could be found. Unable to find a suitable replacement, the Tropicana Atlantic City went into bankruptcy. But before they did all that, let's explain why all of a sudden we started talking about Atlantic City. In an attempt to not lose all their casino holdings, Columbia Sussex spun off the Tropicana Las Vegas into its own company. That move didn't work because all that did was make it a more affordable acquisition for those interested in getting into the Vegas market via a hostile takeover. The Onyx Corporation, headed by former MGM Mirage COO Alex Yemenyagin, did just that and started buying up the Tropicana Las Vegas outstanding debt. Once they owned the majority of it, on May 15, 2009, the Onyx Corporation announced their intentions to take over control of daily operations at the Tropicana after it emerged from bankruptcy later that year. Alex Yemenyagin, previous mentee of MGM Resorts titan Kirk Kerkorian, decided to leave the company in 2005. In the wake of the sale of MGM's movie studios, Alex's departure was reported as simply an interest in pursuing other career opportunities. Behind the scenes, rumors of a fractured relationship between Kerkorian and Yemenyagin were reported when Bobby Baldwin was selected over him to be the CEO of the company's biggest project to date, the largest privately financed construction project in U.S. history, City Center. While Onyx was taking over the Tropicana Las Vegas, in 2009, notorious corporate raider Carl Icahn purchased Tropicana Atlantic City out of bankruptcy for $200 million. To intentionally muddy up the waters, he created a company named Tropicana Entertainment, Inc. to manage his new assets. The move compelled both the New Jersey Gaming Commission and Icahn to reassure people that, while the only difference between the two names were the initials at the end, Tropicana Entertainment Inc. was not the same company as the previous owner's Tropicana LLC. The reason why he created a company with such a similar name became clear when Icahn approached Onyx Corporation to discuss the cost of royalties owed to him for the Vegas property's use of the name Tropicana. The dispute was eventually settled in 2011, giving Onyx the right to use the name Tropicana Las Vegas and Tropicana LV within a 50-mile radius of the casino's current location on the corner of Las Vegas Boulevard and Tropicana, a move that would prevent anyone but Icahn from expanding the brand into other markets. Regardless of the naming dispute, In 2010, Onyx invested $165 million into renovating the Tropicana Las Vegas. What they did with that money may be the most impressive example of refreshing a property the city had ever seen. Onyx improved virtually everything at the Tropicana and erased the dingy reputation it had earned over the past 20 years. They pivoted from a Polynesian to a South Beach theme, unveiled a new logo, redesigned facades, rooms, suites, restaurants, bars, and even the pool had a day-night club for a while. While that and several of the new entertainment options didn't last long, the overall transformation was so remarkable, those failures were chopped up to just the normal cost of doing business in Vegas. The Tropicana pulled off what few have in the past. They radically changed the opinion of the public and the fortunes of the property without knocking down any walls or making structural changes to the interior footprint. They simply left everything where it was and just improved it. It isn't hard to understand why some point to the Tropicana as the model used to inspire the transformations of Imperial Palace into Link and Monte Carlo into Park MGM. It can also be argued that the Tropicana renovation moved Vegas beyond the development phase that called for the implosions of the past to make way for the future and moved it into the asset reinvestment reimagining phase. Looking to build off that success, in 2013, Tropicana announced plans to build a $100 million shopping promenade, dramatically changing the look of the front facade. It was crystal clear from the artist's rendering that ownership was taking their inspiration from the recently opened and affectionately coined Mecca Walgreens next to Planet Hollywood, not only in scope, but in general appearance. Mecca Walgreens is a multi-story dining and retail location anchored by the pharmacy chain and featuring the largest LED display in history at the time. The shops at Tropicana would be three stories tall, offer more than 30 retail stores, a food court, and two large restaurants, one of which celebrity chef Robert Irvine would open his first Vegas restaurant in. Artist renderings show the new structure would blend in almost seamlessly with the renovated look of the property, unlike a similar project announced at the other end of the strip at Treasure Island, which seemed to make a concerted effort to appear different from the existing exterior. Purists vocalized their disapproval when it was learned that the project would require the iconic stained glass ceiling to be removed from the property. But like so many announced plans for the Tropicana, this one didn't make it past the concept phase. In 2015, Penn National Gaming bought the Tropicana for $360 million. Seemingly part of the "so you just bought a casino" manual, plans to reinvest in the property were once again talked about. Since then, other than bringing a Robert Irvine restaurant to the property, there are a few examples of where that money went. That's not to say that they hadn't invested money in the property, it's just they weren't as noticeable as the Trop's previous transformation, perhaps a victim of raised expectations. Regardless, Tropicana appeared to be retaining its standing in the marketplace post its 2010 reimagining, firmly ensconced as a quality option in the heart of the middle market, offering a refreshing change of pace from the massive casino conglomerates controlling the majority of the industry on the Strip. In 2022, Bally's Corp bought Tropicana for $148 million, and rumors about a rebranding began. Before progress could be made on that front, the Oakland A's baseball team announced plans to relocate to Las Vegas. Plans were announced to build a stadium on the site, complete with a new hotel casino anchoring the property. Those plans came one step closer to fruition on April 2nd, when the property closed and preparation for destruction were announced to make way for the planned project. However, many are skeptical. Skeptical about the A's relocation to Vegas, the stadium plan, and the new resort. Only time will tell what happens to the land Tropicana called home for just short of 67 years. In the end, Tropicana was the kind of property in Vegas that everyone knew about, but most didn't spend much time at, which is a real shame. Its contribution to the experiences available in the market was a unique blend of classic intimacy and affordable luxury. Many properties in Vegas seek to transport you from everyday life to a personal version of paradise, but the use of bright spaces gave the Tropicana a feeling of warmth and carelessness. Unfortunately, as has happened to so many properties before it, Tropicana wasn't able to keep up with modern options. Its leadership stopped trying to innovate and allowed time to ravage the property. When it opened, it had the challenge of location against it. However, today that excuse can't be used as Tropicana was unable to capitalize on the traffic generated by professional sports teams in the area, like other properties in the vicinity. It'll be interesting to see if it becomes part of the party or a casualty of progress.